Our second speaker is Emil Pinta, and he's going to speak on the Pilotone label and its somewhat remarkable catalog of operatic, classical, and Broadway music. Emil is a longtime member of ARSC, and he served as a member of the Archive Committee in 1986 and 87. His articles have appeared in the ARSC Journal, Record Research, the Dear Departed New Amberola Graphic, and England's The Record Collector. He does have other interests. He wrote a book called The Youngest Shrink, a humorous book about his life and career as a psychiatrist. I think reason enough to nominate him for the board. So, Emil, if you would come up. We're going to find out all about the Pilotone label.
Probably more than you ever wanted to know, actually. So this is a talk on the Pilotone label with an emphasis on its classical and Broadway music. After I wrote this title, I thought maybe I better add somewhat in there because I didn't want to get expectations too high on this talk. One of the things that intrigued me about the Pilotone label was that virtually nothing has been written about it in the recorded sound literature. Of course, it's not in the Rust or Sutton books because they have cutoff dates that don't include the dates for Pilotone. But there's several encyclopedias of recorded sound that also have nothing about the Pilotone label. Galen Gart's book on post-World War II labels has an entry for it, but it gives only 1 year of production, 1947, and says incorrectly that its primary output is jazz. And most artist and composer discographies seem to also ignore records on the Pilotone label of these artists. So, like Roger Dangerfield, it doesn't get much respect. So where do you get information from? Well, now we have the internet, of course, and if you haven't discovered it, a tremendous source of information is Billboard magazine online with Google. And I use several articles in particular for this talk. And also, Billboard was very helpful in helping me identify lists and also record release dates. I don't have any access to ledgers or files that might give recording dates for the Pilotone label. And I should mention that some of the information I'm talking about today was covered in an article of mine in the Record Collector last year. So what do we know about Pilotone? Well, the Pilotone label existed from 1945 to 1949. I've been able to identify at least 31 albums, and with nearly one half of them representing serious music, a completely arbitrary designation on my behalf. Records were made by the Pilot Radio Corporation of Long Island City, manufacturers of radios and shortwaves, and with one exception, all Pilotone records were issued in 10-inch four record album sets on red or black vinylite. The one exception was their venture into children's records in 1947 with Dick Powell narrating The Fox and the Grapes. Powell also sings a chorus of Skip to My Lou on the record. In 1947, Powell was in a transition from being a singing actor to a dramatic actor. There was a tie-in between Pilotone and Mutual Broadcasting System. Mutual Broadcasting System had radio station WOR as its flagship station. However, the exact relationship is unclear. But the entire Pilotone album was produced by Nate Abramson, who was head of WOR's Artist Bureau, and many of the Pilotone artists had performed on the Mutual Network. In fact, some early press releases referred to Pilotone as a Mutual Broadcasting affiliate. First Pilotone albums were released in late 1945. The plant began pressing records in December of 1944. However, it initially was limited to pressing only records for the War Department, most likely Armed Forces Radio Service transcriptions. Commercial records were not pressed until after the end of World War II in late 1945. The Pilotone album sold for just under $5, about $60 in today's money, higher than 10-inch Red Seal and Columbia Masterworks, which of course had some of the best-known artists. Records were sold by mail order, Pilot radio dealers, and at music and department stores. They advertised that it was the only company in the world to record exclusively on Vinylite. Vinylite records shipped very well. They were virtually unbreakable. And even today, if you order a Pilotone record from somewhere, you can be pretty sure that you're not going to be humming these blues when you get your records in a cracked shape. Record delivery blues by rhythm and blues artist Rusty Bryant. Pilotone ended its record production in November 1949. It announced that it was going out of the record business. It said it would skip the controversy of the war of record speeds that began with the introduction of the long playing record in 1948 and the 45 RPM in 1949, both of those, of course, also on vinyl. Also, the 1948 American Federation of Musicians recording ban that took place throughout most of January must have also cut into its profits. No album seemed to have been released after December 1947. So in November 1949, it offered its equipment up for sale. It said it was going to retain record masters. There were 18 record presses and actual recording studio material. And in the 1950s, Grand Award and Waldorf Music Hall LPs reissued a number of albums. Most of these were issued on the 10-inch Music Hall LPs that sold for 99 cents in Woolworth stores. This is a preliminary Pilotone listing of the albums that I've been able to locate. The first four were albums with composers Jerome Kern and George Gershwin. There's also some Irish melodies, some Latin melodies, and also ethnic music and religious music. Pilotone used a unique matrix catalog numbering system. The matrix numbers are etched in the runoff area between the sound grooves and the label. But what's unique about it is that the catalog number for the record is the same as the main matrix number. Therefore, two sides of a record have different catalog numbers. And I don't know of any other American record company in the electric era that happened to do this. The meaning of the matrices and of the matrix suffixes and prefixes is unclear. If there is a prefix, it's usually PR, or it is always PR. Some records didn't have a matrix, which I suppose simply stated might mean Pilotone Records. But the suffixes range from letters B to M, so they couldn't indicate really a take number or the take that was issued. M would be the 11th take, so very few of them. It's just a big guess on my part, but they may have applied to the record pressing machines that were used. These letters may designate a particular machine. The first two Pilotone albums were released in December 1945 in time for the holiday season. They were Jerome Kern Showboat Selections and also just Jerome Kern Selections, which they also called a memorial album, because Jerome Kern had died in November 1945. These were issued in December 1945. The Kern Showboat Selections had several artists, but featured Harry Stockwell and Evelyn Wyckoff. And the Jerome Kern Memorial Album, pretty much the same. Now, Stockwell and Wyckoff would have been pretty well known to people in the New York area, and particularly, I think, in 1945. Stockwell appeared in some films. Here's a film from here's a sheet music from a film, Ted Lewis film, Here Comes the Band. And picture on the right is on Wyckoff. But they were in the original run of Oklahoma that opened in 1943. Joan Roberts and Alfred Drake were the original Curly and Laura, but they were the second Curly and Laura. And they actually appeared in this role on Broadway for a year. And here's a program from the St. James Theater in 1944. This would have been about the time that they were recording their albums. Here's a label from the Jerome Kern Selections album, Touch of Your Hand, from Roberta, with Wyckoff and Stockwell. And here's a picture of Harry Stockwell and Old Man River from the Showboats selections. And by the way, this album of Showboat selections did not make it into Jack Raymond's Show Music on Records. So Stockwell had a good baritone voice, and if you play a selection number two, we'll hear a little bit of his voice. And good-looking guy, he was the father of actor Dean Stockwell. Track number two.
You and me, we sweat and strain, body all aching and racked with pain. Out that bar, lift that pail, you get a little drunk, and your limbs in jail. Dark is weary and sick of life. I'm tired of living and feel of dying.
Studer recorded commercial records I know of that Stockwell made of Broadway music. This is a list of the selections on the Porgy and Bess highlights. Matter of fact, this orchestra and also the Kern selections used WGN Chicago Station Orchestra, which was the Mutual affiliate. And this one featured Bruce Foote and an unidentified soprano. Why was she unidentified? I don't know. Maybe she was under contract to somebody else. Maybe she didn't want to be identified with a new label. Bruce Foote, by the way, was a regular on Chicago, a Mutual, Chicago's Theater of the Air, and also appeared in concerts and oratorios in the Chicago area, and was chairman of the voice department at the University of Chicago for 37 years. Now, why is there this album up here? Well, this is Gail Foote, Bruce Foote's daughter, and she and her husband, Carson Page, made several albums back in the 1960s, and I thought, well, her having been in the music business, if I find her, maybe she'll know something about ledgers for Pilotone, or at least know who the unidentified sopranos might be, but she didn't. I tracked her down. She's in her 70s. She was living in Nashville. The interesting thing is that her husband, Carson Parks, composed the words and music to Something Stupid and had the original recording of it. You can find it on YouTube. Story goes that Frank Sinatra heard it, and then he and Nancy recorded this, and they... it was number one song for 4 weeks in 1967. She said it took her husband only an hour to write the words and music. In March 1947, Pilotone released what they called their operatic series. The album featured several artists. Donald Dame, you may know, because he recorded several studio cast records for RCA in the 1950s, Student Prince, Blossom Time. Gene Merrill sang with the Met for several years. Hugh Thompson, I'll get to in a minute. But I think the real gem on this album is Gertrude Riebla, soprano. Riebla was chosen by Toscanini for his 1943 NBC broadcast of Rigoletto Act 4, and she also sang Pacha Pacha Mio Dio. She was a runner-up in the 1948 Met Auditions of the Air and had her Met debut as Aida in with the Met. So here I have her selection singing track number 4, singing a selection from Tosca. Of Zinka Melanoff in that or not, but Thompson, the baritone on the album, was a winner in the 1944 Met Auditions of the Air. Tall, thin, and good-looking, he probably cast a good shadow as the bullfighter Escamillo in Carmen, and he sang Carmen several times at the Met as well as supporting roles for 7 or 8 years. And on the album, that's the selection that he sings, the Toreador song from Carmen. Another interesting album is called Pauline Alpert at the Keyboard. Alpert, most of you might know, was primarily a jazz pianist, but in this set of albums, she recorded classical selections. Alpert made several recordings for Victor in the 1920s, she was on some sheet music in the 1920s. She also composed some songs. Dream of a Doll was apparently her theme song that she composed. And in 1995, Pearl CD released an album or CD of her songs. Seth Winter did the transfers on that. On this album, as you can see, she sings primarily classical selections. And I have a little bit of one of her selections here on track 6. This translates, French name translates to The Golden Wedding. I think you'll recognize the melody from it. But she can only stay in the classical vein for so long before she bursts off into jazz. So it'd be kind of interesting. I think purists wouldn't like this, but I like this one. Album, at least I think, is Gypsy Songs with Alex Sándor and his violin. Sándor was a Hungarian-born violinist and director. And the interesting thing about this album and the treat on this album are two selections by soprano Anne Rozelle. And an even bigger treat is they're from the operetta Janusz Vitéz, which some people consider to be the national operetta of Hungary. And Rozelle, who was Hungarian born, never made these recordings, first recording she made of them. Rozelle was featured in the Record Collector in 2002, contains a very fine discography, but the discography overlooks the two selections on the Pilotone label. Just a little bit about Rozelle. She was born in 1893 in Hungary. She made her stage debut at age 16 or 17 as Alushka, the heroine, in the operetta that I just mentioned. During the 1920s, she was an internationally acclaimed soprano singing in Paris, in London. She was the first German Tirando. She also sang at the Met and with the San Francisco Opera Company. In the 1940s, she settled in Manhattan, where she joined the faculty of the New York College of Music and stayed there for about the next 15 years. When she made these recordings would have been the time that she was on the faculty at the New York College of Music. She would have been in her mid-50s, as she appears in this photo here. She was known particularly for the warmth of her voice and richness of her voice. And we'll play this one selection here. You'll hear Alex Shanner and his violin a little bit, and then the selection, which is actually Alushka's song from this operetta, which has a very haunting melody. She retired from the stage in the 1940s and later moved to Lakeland, Florida, just south of Tampa. And at age 72, she had yet one more role for her to learn at the Lakeland Community Theater production of South Pacific, given in Lakeland, Florida in 1965. And what role did she sing? Role of Bloody Mary. Be great to have a tape of her singing Bally High. One may exist somewhere. Another interesting album is this one, tragic album, Jean Therine, Piano Moods. Therine attended Juilliard School of Music. She won several international piano competitions in the 1940s. She joined the faculty of Juilliard after she finished school there. She performed Rachmaninoff's Concerto No. 1 at Carnegie Hall with Leonard Bernstein conducting. And then 10 years after she made this recording, she was found dead. Don't know any details about it except that it was ruled a suicide, carbon monoxide poisoning. She was found by her parents. In 1947, Pilotone released two albums that featured the Radio City Music Hall, directed by Charles Previn, the director of Radio City. It said, "Bring Radio City into your own home." There was a Gilbert and Sullivan selections, and also selections by Victor Herbert. John Baker, baritone, was with the Met for several years and made his only recording, I think, of this on this album. Robert Marshall appeared in Chicago's Theater of the Air, tenor. But I think the real interesting one is Elaine Malpin, soprano. Malpin was only 15 years old when she would have made these recordings. She went on to become a principal singer at the New York City Opera Company. Also, she was attractive, petite, had a reputation as a very reliable performer and sang in several live NBC broadcasts of opera in the 1950s. Where she's heard most often today is singing duets with Mary Alonza from The Toast of New Orleans. Catherine Grayson appeared in the film, but apparently due to contractual obligations, she couldn't sing on the album. And Malpin sings a duet from Madame Butterfly and from Traviata with Lanza. This is one of the album, this is one of the labels, or singing Sweethearts. Then in 1946, with great fanfare, Pilotone released what they called their Academy of Music series. Two classical albums were released, one with Rudolph Gantz conducting Holberg Suite. At the time, this was the only available recording of Holberg Suite. There had been a previous Victor recording, but that was no longer available. And also Leinsdorf conducting Haydn's Farewell Symphony. This was an advertisement for the album that appeared in the New York Times. This is one that appeared for the Schirmer Music Company. Shows Deems Taylor, commentator, talked on both these albums and shows him by a Christmas tree holding the two albums. These were the two albums that were produced as Academy of Music. Nobody knows what the Metropolitan Symphony Orchestra was. I mean, somebody knows, but I don't know, and there was nothing in the paper about it. I can tell you in a minute who it wasn't. But it got good reviews. The New York Times reviewed these selections and said that that the technology on the Vinylite records was first rate and the performances were sound. Other reviewers said that Deems Taylor talked too long. On the LP reissues on Grand Award, it was called the American Artist Symphony. This is the label for one of the symphonies with Deems Taylor giving its commentary. Variety magazine announced in 1947 that the Metropolitan Opera Association was granted an injunction against Pilot Radio forbidding the use of Metropolitan on albums or records. The interesting thing the Metropolitan Opera Association did, according to the Variety magazine, was to survey record stores in the New York area that were selling the album, and they found that in 70% of cases, people who bought the album thought that they were buying something by the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. So the judge ruled that the name Metropolitan was misleading. So in summary, during Pilotone's brief existence, at least 31 four-record albums were produced. Pilotone managed to obtain talented artists. Some were at the beginning of their careers. Others were lesser-known established artists. Many had been associated with the Mutual Broadcasting System. There are many unanswered questions about Pilotone, no available ledgers or files that give recording dates, but some may exist somewhere. So I think there's need for more research into this largely ignored label. That's it.